This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Satirist Harry Shearer has written and directed a new movie called Teddy Bear's Picnic. Shearer is a former cast member of Saturday Night Live. He's appeared in many films. He does the voices of several characters on The Simpsons and presents his own political satires every week on his public radio program, Le Show. His new movie is a satire based on the Bohemian Grove in Northern California. It's an exclusive and secretive all-male retreat for the rich and powerful. The membership has included presidents, cabinet members, and business tycoons. Shearer's satire is set at a retreat called Zambezi Glen. In this scene, the Glen is having its inaugural Ladies' Day for the wives and companions of the male membership. The women are welcomed by the patriarch of Zambezi Glen, Porterfield Porty Pendleton, who is also a chancellor of a California university. He's played by Michael McKean.
What you will see today in your short time here, ladies, is a glimpse of a special place. A place where warmth, fellowship, and a love of the arts blossom in the splendid bosom, excuse me, in the splendid lap of nature. Whether we be construction mogul, banker, university president, cabinet member, or humble spinner of the webs of commerce, this is our once-a-year sanctuary. We hope you understand at the end of your brief visit here why, to stay special, this place must remain unknown to others. We share it with you today, so that in 6 weeks, when you lose your menfolk to the Glen for their summertime sojourn here, you will have the smell of our sacred redwoods lingering in your lovely nostrils. And now, in line with our most treasured traditions, as patriarch, I hereby declare the Glen and all its bars open.
Harry Shearer, welcome back to Fresh Air.
Thanks, Terry.
So your new movie is a satire of the Bohemian Grove. Before we get to your satire, what is the thing that you're satirizing?
Well, it's a retreat that has been held every year, every summer, for more than a century, in the Redwood Country of Northern California, where the richest and most powerful white men in our country assemble to basically regress to the activities of a college sophomore in a frat house, except on a much higher budget.
Such as?
Well, prodigious amounts of consumption of very potent alcoholic beverages, for one, and the concomitant results therefrom, i.e. lying face down on the golf course for much of the following day, walking around naked and peeing ceremonially on redwood trees from time to time, and putting on elaborate shows that involve a lot of drag are three of the main activities. And the thing that got me into this, I'd heard about it for years and known about it a little bit, but that these people at the peak of their power, that's their choice of a week of, you know, a very special week carved out of their busy schedules devoted to that. It just seemed like such a weird, funny choice to me.
So since the Bohemian Grove is so secretive, how did you do any research to figure out what you want to satirize?
Well, you know, most secrets, most people who know secrets love to tell them to somebody. Otherwise, nobody knows that they know a secret. The two independent film producers from San Francisco, both women, who originally approached me and said, we want to do a movie about Bohemian Grove, but we don't really know what kind of movie to do. I said, well, if I do it, it was a comedy. They said, okay. So they knew a lot of people who were former members or relatives of members, sons who had rejected the call to follow the family into the club, hookers who worked for the retreat. It's a very high class of hooker they get. So they made it possible, and they even made it possible for me to see the archives, the club. The Grove is a retreat run by the Bohemian Club, and they have an archive in their clubhouse in San Francisco of all of the posters that they've done of the various shows. They put on these elaborate shows at the end of each encampment with a lot of drag and a lot of pseudo-classical references, and they keep an archive of the posters back 100 years, so I got to look at that. So they really opened the door for me to do a lot of research. And then, totally coincidentally, after I wrote the script, I was invited to visit a little kind of weekend preview at the place itself when I think they were trying to see if they wanted me to consider thinking about joining, and I was going, well, I'd say this is a good opportunity to fact check for me.
Excuse me, they were thinking of asking you, do you represent the rich and the powerful?
No, but one of the other goofy things about, and thank you for asking, one of the other goofy things about this place as opposed to the other gatherings of the rich and powerful, because the original club started out as a club of writers and artists, hence the name, before the businessmen took it over, they retain a certain fondness for having a certain representation of show business people there, kind of as mascots, partly because they like to have they need certain amount of professionalism to put on these shows, but also they like having people from show business there, and so I think that was the reason that I was extended the invitation, because they've heard that sometimes I'm in show business.
So you were invited to actually be a member or to show up?
Not to be a member, but to come, you know, it was like, I think, in their eyes, a mutual sniffing out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you didn't make the final cut, huh?
I don't think either side wanted to basically, I went, to, as I say, just to fact check, just to see how close I'd gotten in my script. But I don't think that I made whatever cut there might have been, no.
Have you heard from anyone from the Bohemian Grove?
We heard, I think the production office heard kind of informal feelers that maybe it would be nice to have a screening of the movie up at the Grove. This is sort of in the tradition of the saddest thing about doing satire that I've discovered is that you can think you're making really, really hard-nosed fun of people, and 9 times out of 10, their reaction is they're flattered. Which is so disappointing. I mean, we did Spinal Tap, and we thought, man, we've really socked it to the heavy metal and hard rock guys, and they've been nothing but flattered ever since. And so I think probably these guys might feel the same way. I don't know. We haven't followed up on those feelers as of yet.
Now, your movie Teddy Bear's Picnic is about to open in a few cities. And mm-hmm. So you're in the phase now of movie making that's about, you know, promoting the film, getting to people to know that it exists. Now, promotion is something that you have parodied a lot. You've satirized a lot on your show. So what's it like to be on the other end of actually having to do it and to do it in a way that you feel comfortable with?
Present company accepted, it's the worst. No, I mean, I enjoy these kinds of situations where some dusty NPR person is asking me questions.
And sexless.
And sexless. But, you know, this is a world, and I've made fun of this, and now I'm having to deal with it. This is a world in which the entertainment business is owned by about 5 or 6 huge, huge corporations. When they open a movie, when they bring a movie to market, they spend more money just advertising it than I would spend making 20 of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm being literal. So just to make the public aware that a movie exists in this climate is a Sisyphean task, and it's very difficult. Plus, you know, we're coming out like a week and a half after the Oscars, so for a long period of time, a lot of people wouldn't come to our press day, which is when you have a lot of reporters gather together to sort of interview you because there was better food at some Oscar preview luncheon, you know, stuff like that. It's very, very difficult. It's I would easily say it's been the most difficult part of the whole process of making an independent movie.
Now, even though you've made fun of people who overplug their thing on a talk show, are you in the position now of being interviewed and having to find creative ways of working in the name of your movie?
Absolutely. Teddy Bear's Picnic opens Friday. Yeah, sure. I mean, part of the curse of being a good observer, I guess, and making fun of the stuff that's really going on is you find yourself doing it willy-nilly. I mean, when we'd made Spinal Tap and then went out on a rock and roll tour and thought, how stupid are we? We're now going through exactly the same kind of crap we made fun of people for doing.
Yeah, but without the codpiece.
Yeah, without, well,
maybe yes. Not, okay.
asks about codpiece again. But yes, it is a a humbling experience to be doing some of the same stuff you make fun of people for doing. One hopes one can do it a little more gracefully, or at least with a little more ironic self-awareness than most people who are flogging stuff in public are doing.
Do you go through those like nightmare moments, though, where you feel like, oh my God, I'm doing exactly what it is that I make fun of?
The most nightmarish it was ever in that sense was when we were on the road with Tap, and we're running into, you know, promoters who were just as vile and just as stupid, and record companies that were just as rapacious as anything we ever made fun of. And then you just think, how stupid are we? We already know this. We don't have to do the research now. But in that case, the saving grace was we were on stage for 2.5 hours every night playing very loud, and that's always fun.
My guest is satirist Harry Shearer. He wrote and directed the new film Teddy Bear's Picnic. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is satirist Harry Shearer. He wrote and directed the new film Teddy Bear's Picnic. It's a satire based on the exclusive and secretive all-male retreat, the Bohemian Grove. Now, your film, Teddy Bear's Picnic, is opening just after the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure you were home watching the Oscars from the vantage point of independent filmmaker. So what'd you think of the Oscars?
Schadenfreude. from the Schadenfreude seat. What did I think of the Oscars? Too long. Bring back Steve Martin as the host, or let Nathan Lane host it. I didn't really need to have all those people telling me why movies were those little sequences telling me why movies are great. You know, it was a little self-serving. The Oscars, self-serving? I'm shocked. What else? Oh, yeah. And just on the joke level, you know, when Whoopi walked over and covered up the statue, I was yelling to my significant other, but the statues that John Ashcroft covered up had sexual organs visible. The thing about Oscar is he doesn't. That sort of changes the joke. Oscar has no genitalia, so what she was covering up was a lack of something, not something. But what do you know? It's the Oscars. What are you going to do? It's the Oscars.
Have you ever been to the actual ceremony?
When I was a kid, I went as part of a radio show with my colleagues, Michael McKeon, way back then. And we were not in the auditorium. We were in the radio interview area, and we were being annoying satirical kids who asked the stupidest questions we could think of to people, to celebrities, as they were departing the Oscars, because we knew the radio interview area was the last part of the gauntlet they had to walk before they could get out to freedom. And so our particular form of torture that we applied to them was just to ask really insanely stupid questions to them.
Like what? And what did you ask?
Have you ever been to New York was one of the classics that we asked. You can't imagine the looks on people's faces when you shove a microphone in front of their face at the Oscars and say, let me ask you a question. Have you ever been to New York? Yeah. Thank you. Because they've just been asked, you know, insanely stupid questions, but nothing as bad as that.
Endearing yourself to the industry at an early age.
That's right.
Something else I want to know what you make of, and that's the Nightline Letterman controversy. I wonder what you think of ABC putting Nightline in Jeopardy.
Well, Nightline and Jeopardy together would probably get a better rating. I did a piece on my radio show where I had Ted kind of submit an audition tape for where he thought the program should be going, which is doing a show called Late Night Line with a studio audience and Paul Schaefer and the ABC News Symphony. And his guests were Aaron Brown, who comes on the show and reveals that since he's on opposite Greta Von Susteren, Aaron's now had some eye work done. And Zbigniew Brzezinski, who comes on to discuss, you know, the trouble spots in the world while being dipped into a big vat of oatmeal. And that's basically my opinion of what's going on. You know, for anybody who's shocked that the major networks would rather not be in the news business at this point, pay closer attention is all I can say. I thought that the most bizarre part of the whole thing is the door that had opened into the the thing that drives most decisions in commercial broadcasting, which is not ratings and certainly not quality, it's demographics. It's the fact that the advertising business demands the delivery of 18 to 34 or 18 to 49-year-old people. And the belief that anybody outside that age range, well, they, you know, because they, everybody, when they hear that fact for the first time, says, well, but I'm 54 and I buy a lot of stuff. But the myth in the advertising business is once you've passed 34, your brand preferences are established and you cannot be swayed by advertising.
Oh, is that
therefore,
it?
That's it.
I didn't realize
so
that.
So therefore, and that's the tail that wags the whole dog. And there are people even inside the advertising business who are saying, this is a 30-year-old model now, and the boomers are different, and boomers probably are still making new choices, and we shouldn't be adhering to this model anymore, but their voice is in the wilderness of the advertising jungle.
Do you take this personally, that you're part of a demographic that doesn't count?
Me personally, I never counted, because I had the advantage of working in advertising at a very early age. When I was 18, I worked at an ad agency for a couple of summers. And when you see how the sausage is made, you know, dot, 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 you have bacon.
So did you have to write ads yourself when you were working there?
Yeah, I wrote ads. I produced ads, produced commercials, did the whole thing. I was part of a big... My favorite part of the advertising experience was when they summoned all of the talent in the agency together for a big push, I think they called it, because a competing soap product or detergent product to the one that was our client had a hugely successful campaign, and our client was desperate to come up with something to match it. And so everybody had to go home and just, you know, push to, you know, and it was just an agency-wide search for some idea that would be as good as Stronger Than Dirt.
Well, Harry Shearer, good luck with the movie. Thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Terry. Give my love to Gene Simmons, right?
Oh, anytime. Harry Shearer wrote, directed, and co-stars in the new satirical film Teddy Bear's Picnic. It opens in New York this weekend and in Los Angeles and San Francisco next week.